Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
We are joined this morning by a Dr. Chido Chasa Nyerere, who is a postdoctoral researcher at the Institute for Pan-African Thought and Conversation at the University of Johannesburg. Good morning to you. Thanks for joining us. How are you doing this rainy and miserable morning?
Good morning, Howard. I am very well, thank you. And good morning to the listeners.
So what is the latest coming out of the region?
It's interesting that the Russian government has already put its card on the table. So Russia yesterday announced that what it actually wants is that there is a return to the situation that prevailed at the collapse of the USSR in 1992.
Right.
So you can always stress that Russia has been strategic in this war. Now, I know war is not something really to find joy in, but you should appreciate the strategy that Russia has brought here. Russia has already given its offensive strike to Ukraine, but it has done so tactfully in the sense that it's not full war, it's not outright war necessarily, because they've been calculating in terms of the damage they want to cause. They've also struck at a very strategic position near the nuclear plants in Ukraine. And this is to signal to the world and to the US and NATO particularly, that they have the capability and they also have the intelligence to know where to strike. So had Russia really wanted to annihilate Ukraine and potentially the world, it would have done so. So the strategy has always been to cause some harm so that then you bring people to the negotiating table. I know I sound pro-Russian, but from a strategic point of view, Russia has been very strategic in that sense. And now that we have put their card on the table to say we want relations to return to 1992, the situation that prevailed there, you already see that it's actually saying to NATO and the US that what NATO has done is illegal in the sense that there was an agreement, right? At the collapse of the USSR, there was an agreement that NATO will not go further into Eastern Europe. And we know that that has not been the case. NATO has really taken over. And so, of course, it causes insecurity for Russia. And again, the proverbial security dilemma is at stake here. When your enemy amasses arms and they set up military bases near you, of course, you will be insecure because you do not know the intention and you do not know when they strike. So Putin, in that sense, has been proactive in providing this kind of leadership. Of course, it will, and there is no real winner in war because humans are always the casualty in war.
What he seems to have done, and is trying very hard to do it, maybe he left it a little bit late, is to create a history and a context to this war. Do you think that he's actually done that successfully?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite get your question, Howard. My network is also problematic. Could you please repeat your question?
Sure. To some extent, what Putin's tried to do is to create a historical context for the war. Some countries, most people around the world are not buying into it. Some people are. Do you think that he's done this successfully to create a historical context for his invasion of Ukraine?
Thank you. I get you. So we have to understand that there is always a coloniality of information or knowledge. There's always control of information that's put in the public domain. And there's also the issue of propaganda. Now, we should be very careful here in terms of whose narrative we imbibe on. Both Russia and the U.S. are imperialists in this case. So the prevailing narrative, of course, will be to favor what the U.S. is posturing. And I choose my words carefully here. It's posturing, right? In the sense that BRICS is driving its particular agenda. So it wants the world to know its particular view on the matter. Russia, too, is doing the same. So to answer your question directly, it is yet to emerge whose narrative is really superior here. Of course, Russia is factual, right? They are trying to create a history, as you say, and the history is there. Now, people will tend to be very forgetful when something comes up and it prevails. But there is historical context to this, and legally speaking, Russia would be in the clear in the sense that they are saying what was agreed upon in 1992 has been traversed by the U.S. through NATO. Like, it has been traversed, and therefore, if you like, you may say the agreement is falling out of place. And in order to bring the agreement into effect again or renegotiate that agreement, inevitably war was going to be on the card, given the history of Russia.
In terms of South Africa's response to the situation, what are your thoughts on that?
South Africa's response has been very slow. So we are now speaking about almost 2 weeks since the war has begun. And to date, there's only one South African who has been repatriated to South Africa. Mm. And this one South African has found help from the Pakistani government, not necessarily the South African government. We are yet to see people that have been repatriated by the South African government back to South Africa, and we hear their stories. But of course, this has exposed our leadership in terms of coordination. I say this because, remember, this is a state. We are really speaking about state resources. State resources that are well-funded in terms of the Disaster Management Act, and also state resources that are well-managed in terms of intelligence and also diplomacy. So on the state level, there are resources that, had there been coordination, we would have had South Africans repatriated back to South Africa. So, for instance, on Monday, there is a report from Nigeria that the Nigerian government has repatriated its 360 or so students back into the country, right? And you then wonder, why is it that our government has not done something to that effect? And it's been 2 weeks here. Now, we also have to appreciate the fact that it is a war that's going on there. And so part of the communication will be very difficult because presumably even the embassy in Ukraine could be under siege. But here is where collective or unionizing of resources can come into effect and help. So I think that in terms of the response from our government, it has been very slow. And I also think that had there been a collective of government agencies, and collectively I'm speaking about the African government, there will be a pooling of resources, right? And then it would be easier with all these resources being controlled from a particular base or centrally, it will be easier then for government to respond and evacuate their people, because it is a war after all.
You're talking about it as though it's a speed thing. The action has been slow. Do you think that it is? It talks to the fact that they just are slow to mobilize, or that they're making the wrong choices.
So it's actually on two levels. They are slow to mobilize. There is no doubt about that. Mm. They are very slow to mobilize. But here is another issue. We have to appreciate that because communication has been hampered by the war, it wouldn't be as effective as ordinarily. But here are the scenarios. We need government to be able to plan, right? Have plans on how to tackle such issues. Of course, we do not plan for war necessarily, as in this case. This war was not planned by the South African government. Mm. But you see, the prevailing conditions are such that leadership comes in and fills the vacuum. So the lack of leadership in terms of coordinating and planning as a response to the ensuing conditions is problematic.
Do you think that they are going to come around to it and eventually have little choice or find a moral position that condemns Russia for this for the invasion?
I think they've done that sufficiently, and I say sufficiently because from a pan-African perspective, this war is not ours. Right? This war is not ours. This war is between two imperialists. Now, in terms of condemning war, I think the South African government has sufficiently addressed that as a state or as a nation, but also as a collective through the AU. So I think there is sufficient addressing of the issue on that level.
That is a very interesting and different perspective. That was Dr. Chidochase Nyerere, postdoctoral researcher at the Institute for Pan-African Thought and Conversation at the University of Johannesburg.